Time is running out for the planet Earth.
It's impervious to all voices.
It is an intriguing sensation.
It's a nuclear device.
Fun, fun, fun!
Yes, that's nice.
Statistically speaking, of course, it's still the safest way to travel.
It belongs to a creature from outer space.
It's a bird!
It's a plane!
It's very important.
It does not compute.
It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to another episode of Geek Shall Inherit. I'm Daniel Pickett.
I'm Jason Lindsay.
And happy Martin Luther King Day, everyone.
Hey, yeah, happy MLK.
It may be a holiday for some of you, but we're working. We're here doing a podcast.
Always. We never quit.
That's right. We're trying to get these out every Monday,
mm-hmm.
like a well-oiled machine.
Like a well-oiled, yes, machine.
Which is rare for us.
I'll leave it at that.
One thing that's new that I wanted to kind of point out is something that I'm attempting to do. We'll see if I'm able to keep on it. I started something else, and this is actually news to you. I haven't even told you this.
Is this your bonsai plant?
No.
Oh, okay.
Something I like to call Overcast.
Really?
Which is a follow-up to each podcast. So
oh.
I just did the one for episode 5. You should be able to see it now. And it's all the stuff that we talked about in the episode. You can go and sort of look up, like, remember, I couldn't remember who sang on the Green album because
yes.
I hadn't listened to it at the time.
Oh.
So I put like, you know, where you could find that and the track listing.
Nice.
I put up the trailers that we talked about.
Wow.
I even put up a picture of, what was the action figure's name? Max, the robot, the monster fighter.
The
guy you got me from CBS.
Oh, Max Fighter.
Max Fighter. Yeah. So I put a picture of him up there.
Nice.
So, yeah, just sort of the things we talk about. If you're like, well, what was that? You can go back, and I'm going to try and do it for each episode.
That's
if that's
a great
possible
service.
Yeah.
I was unaware of that you were doing this.
Well, I just it kind of came to me the other night.
That's very cool.
And then I thought up the really clever name, Overcast.
I love
it's
that.
A podcast, but it's over, but you can still go back.
And
see
it's my
what I
favorite
did.
Weather.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So, which is rare here in Southern California,
is.
Which is where we live.
That's a great idea. Thanks for doing
Thank
that.
Thank you. There's no off position for the genius switch. That's what they
no,
say.
No, not in your head.
So that's what I'm going to do. You can look for Overcast. I don't know what day. You know, I'm not going to sort of set a time that I'll put it up, but hopefully between each episode at some point, I'll have culled that stuff.
Nice.
I also put up like the Richard Pryor Star Wars sketch and the Donahue Marie Star Wars sketch, which
awesome.
I had not seen in quite some time.
So not only are people getting entertainment, they're learning things as well.
That's right.
And they're, you know, at your next cocktail party, you can pull some of this information out when things
That's
get
right.
dull.
Yeah. So it's it's a whole multimedia platform.
And then
it's
not get just kicked audio. Out of the party.
That's right. Yeah.
Be what, asked politely
what's
to leave.
That guy.
I'll get my coat.
So something that I wanted to talk about that just started this past week is the show Face Off on the Sci-Fi Network.
Yes, the competition show.
Yes, it's a makeup special effects competition. And actually, we have a friend that is on the show this season.
Yes, we do.
Jerry Macaluso, who was the founder of Soda Toys and is now the president of Pop Culture Shock Collectibles.
Wow.
He is a contestant. And,
oh,
and this
cool.
is something, yeah,
yeah
he told
right.
me about it like in secret, I think at Comic-Con last year. He's like, I can't tell anyone, so I've been sitting on this information. But the first episode is out. It's on Wednesday nights on Sci-Fi. I'm hoping Jerry's going to go all the way.
You know, fantastic.
He calls himself the old man of the group. I think he's the oldest person.
And this is the second season of the show, so it's done pretty well.
This is the second season.
I actually know two of the executive producers of the show.
Okay.
And they may be listening because I've just informed them about the podcast. So
nice.
Dwight and Michael, if you're listening, congratulations on season 2 of the show. And I hope it goes well and that our friend Jerry wins.
You know, it's funny. I didn't watch season 1. I read kind of a bad review of it in Variety and never put it on the DVR, never checked it out. But they ran a marathon of it right before the first episode. And Abby and I watched it. We were delighted. We watched like 6 episodes,
oh, wow.
6 hours of TV last night. I guess 7 technically because Jerry's episode, the
and
first
then it,
episode 2.
And then it finished with the
and
with
then
the winner?
It finished with the first one. And it was great. It was
nice.
So interesting to me. You know, it's a competition, and these challenges take like 3 days.
Yeah.
So it's not like some hinky, you know, apprentice-y
make a sandwich kind of thing.
Right? Yeah. It's like, no, these guys have to design, sculpt, apply.
Right.
You know, it's really intricate and very, very fascinating. And it's tied in with the Westmore family, who are, you know, legacy makeup
2 or 3
people.
Generations, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
The host is one of the Westmores. I actually worked with one of the Westmores at Disney His Chuck Westmore, and his dad was the guy that created the Creature from the Black Lagoon.
I keep forgetting that you had a history over at Disney.
Yeah,
I keep mentioning that, and I forgot that you have that history.
I do. Yeah,
I'll have to ask you more questions off the air.
Okay. So Sci-Fi Network.
Very cool.
Wednesday
yeah.
nights.
Tune
face
in.
Off. Check out Jerry. Go Team Jerry.
Good luck, Jerry.
That's what we say. One thing I forgot to mention last time, we were talking about sort of nerd geeky things we got for Christmas.
Yes.
And Abby got me something that I neglected to mention last time.
No, what?
She got me Franklin.
She got you Franklin?
Franklin.
Franklin from?
From Charlie Brown.
Franklin from Charlie Brown.
Yeah, so, you know, round two has been, and I guess it was...
Franklin?
Yeah, the little black kid. The African-American
How come
child.
I don't remember Franklin?
See, he was impossible to find. I've been collecting these Charlie Brown Christmas figures. I have a couple of the baseball ones. I have all the Halloween ones. They're made by Round 2 and before that, Playing Mantis.
And they changed the scale, right?
They did went... this year.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But last year, Franklin was like one per case.
Wow.
Never could find him. Searched everywhere.
How did she find him?
She found him on eBay, I think. I
God
don't know.
Bless
she
her.
She said he was really tough to find.
You should marry that woman.
I sort of mentioned... Well, funny you should mention that. I am going to. But it was just one of those things where I mentioned in passing, like, I never got Franklin, and they didn't put him out this year. Which is fine because it's a small
I
scale.
Mentioned in passing.
I did.
You're the man who leaves lists laying around the house still at 40 years old for mom and dad to go, oh, he doesn't have that. Let's mention in passing.
I did. I mentioned in passing. Just
oh,
like
here's
I
happen to have a photograph right here of the toy.
Here's the current eBay auction.
What's that doing on the dinner table under your plate?
No, but I thought that was very, very cool that she got me.
Very
Franklin.
Cool.
So
yeah.
Now I've got that complete set in that original
scale. She rocks.
Scale. So
that's awesome.
So well, that was an action figure, so I thought that was worth mentioning.
Absolutely. And speaking of our last podcast
yes.
and some of the geeky things we were talking about, we have been, let me tell you something, the Geek Shall Inherit mailboxes have just been stuffed to the gills with responses and compliments, and we can't keep up with this stuff. I mean, my wrist is just... aching from all the autographs I'm doing and
really?
Getting out. Yeah,
see, because I'm not getting giving.
You're not
any
getting
autographs.
Any of that. Okay, because
no,
I've been
getting the
loads
feedback,
of
which is great. And we
fan
really
mail.
Appreciate
yeah,
it.
And we got feedback on the last show from someone who we could mention named Frank Supio,
yeah.
who has a history with Super 7, those super cool Star Wars, you know, Shogun Warrior mashups that are happening.
Yeah.
And was it Kotobukiya that he was?
He was formerly of Kotobukiya,
right.
Now with Super 7, working. You know, he does that Star Wars project, which is awesome. I don't know if just quickly at Comic-Con last year they gave a teaser of what the next one of those will be.
Mm. Oh
they
yeah,
they gave out one of those. It was like the Mazinger Z rockets of the original Shogun Warriors, but it was in white and green.
Mm, I think I have an idea.
Yeah,
that might
and then
be.
They showed a silhouette of everyone's favorite
yes.
bounty hunter.
Yes,
so,
Dengar.
What?
Dengar?
Dengar. What was Dengar's last name?
Dengar
from which
Schwartz.
Episode? Schwartz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, he gave us loads of compliments, and we appreciate the criticisms too, because we'll listen to those and pay attention. But I just wanted to correct something real quick, because he made a comment about me making a comment about Jeremy Bullock, who played Boba Fett. He was the guy inside Boba Fett, and he was
in
like
the original trilogy.
In the original trilogy, and he was an Imperial guard in Empire and everything.
And
I
he
made
appeared
it,
in one of the prequels too.
I think you're right. Yeah, he was like
yeah.
a pilot or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that. I made a crack about, why do I know his name kind of thing? And I shouldn't know the lady in Greedo. Just to clarify, I wasn't saying that he wasn't important enough to know his name. And I wasn't making fun of anybody that has that information. I was being sort of self-deprecating about, why do I have this minutia in my head? You know, for a guy that didn't, speak in the original trilogy, essentially, I know his name and his home address. It's like I retain that stuff. So,
well, I think what Frank was saying was, you should be proud to know that.
Oh,
you should,
yeah.
You should fly that freak flag high.
Yes, it's a very select group that know. But I would say the same thing if I'd said, a bit of information about a Beatle track where backward guitar was played and the date that it was, recorded on. Like, why I retain that stuff. You know, I don't know. You know, World War II, no idea what happened. But this stuff.
There was a
yes.
second one?
Yeah, apparently.
They made a sequel to
yeah,
World War I?
Yeah, it was really popular, and they thought, let's do it again.
Oh, wow.
Let's see who turns up for it.
But I knew a lot of that stuff as a kid, too. Like, I knew Peter Mayhew and Kenny Baker.
Yeah, I knew
David
that stuff.
Prowse.
I didn't know Jeremy. So the Jeremy Bullock stuff and all that sort of, those sort of characters, and that started to happen, I think, in the 90s with all the... started talking about the prequels and the role play games and all that stuff, and suddenly you, because these were the people that would, you know, they would get to come to shows and stuff. Like, you couldn't always get a Mark Hamill, and you certainly couldn't get Harrison Ford. Eventually you got Carrie Fisher, but you could definitely get like a Jeremy Bullock and so on. And, you know, after you get the principal cast, there aren't a lot of, you know, faces in the original trilogy anyway. They're all creatures and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's where that sort of happened. I don't remember knowing his name in 1980, you know, when the movie came out. I think it was much later. Really?
Yeah, unfortunately, I do.
Well, there you go. So
it was funny
just to clarify.
You know, I mentioned last time that we went and saw Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Yes.
There's lots of actors in that have done other things. And I was very cognizant not to be like, oh, that's the guy from, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Because you're in a movie theater.
I know that sort of drives Abby nuts. But,
right.
You know, there was one instance where there was a guy sort of shown in passing. He hadn't spoke yet. She turned to me and looked at me. And I didn't say anything, and I waited, and she goes, that was the guy from The Killing, right?
Oh,
and
no.
I said, yes, it was.
She's infected.
But then I just waited until the end, and then we went to dinner afterwards, and I was just, she was like,
well,
I appreciate you not calling all those things out. And then, you know, I had the laundry list of, oh, he was in Thor, he was in...
I will do the thing where I will grab my laptop, because it'll start to bother me so much that I will grab my laptop, and she'll go, what are you doing? And I was like, I just give me 1 second, and I will look up the whatever film we're watching to figure out who that character was, and then do the quick cross check and go, oh yeah, that's who and then put it away.
Right.
But it will drive me nuts as I'm watching it. Like, I can't get back into the story. I've got to know how I know that guy's face. Basically.
Okay. Yeah.
It's neurotic, I know. But anyway, that's that, Frank. Just so you know, wasn't bagging on Jeremy or anyone that knows that stuff.
But you know it, and you own it.
I know it, I own it,
to do
and
it.
I've now talked about him twice on our podcast. So.
Very nice.
Jeremy, if you're listening, send us a T-shirt.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
So now we're going to do a new segment.
We are?
That will probably be reoccurring.
All this new stuff I don't know about.
I know. Well, it's right, you know. Where this
I missed
is
the meeting last week.
We really should talk about this ahead of time, shouldn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Things we're excited about. I think that's a fairly easy segment to do.
Pretty broad.
I've seen a couple of pretty broads since.
Hey.
Good. What? So the first thing, I believe for you, James Bond.
Yes. They just made the announcement, well, not when you're hearing this, but a few days back, that the entire set of Bond films is coming out in Blu-ray. There are 8 that hadn't come out yet in Blu-ray. They're coming out in one big mega box set for the 50th anniversary, I believe in October, because Skyfall, the newest James Bond film, comes out in November, I think it is.
I believe that's correct.
Which is the 50th anniversary. And, you know, they're, I love that they're being so careful with this and I mean, putting such care into the anniversary. This is a huge deal, certainly for me, but I think in filmdom, this is the most, whatever you want to say about Star Wars, Harry Potter, this is the most successful movie franchise in history, because it's been going on since 1962, you know, for better or worse. And when you start doing projections, you go back to Goldfinger and realize that, you know, the number of theaters it was in 1964 or whatever, it made its money back in 2 weeks, and it was in, you know, it wasn't in 2,400 theaters. It was in like 15 theaters around the country kind of thing. That's a lot of... You know, in the 60s, it was Bond and the Beatles. That was it. You couldn't get any bigger. So I love that they're taking such care. And when they did the press conference for Skyfall, it was to the day, 50 years later, that they announced Sean Connery as Bond.
Nice.
At a press conference. So I love that stuff, that they're doing that. So the Blu-rays are coming out in one mega box set in October. And it got me thinking about the new film, and everyone's excited. And I hope there's going to be some Easter eggs in there for the anniversary. But who we think should do the theme tune to that Bond film, to Skyfall?
Okay.
And you know, I thought the last one, the Jack White, what's her name one, was just awful. I'm sorry, I thought it was one of the worst in the history of the movies. Surprisingly, I thought the Chris Cornell one was pretty good. That grew on me. Ironically, but I thought let's maybe, you know, throw some ideas out there of who should do this. And top of my list,
yes,
and I just bear with me on this, Paul McCartney.
He's already done one.
I know, but that's the beauty of it. He did what most people associate as maybe the best theme ever, "Live and Let Die." Wouldn't it be cool to have him do it? Or, you know, I think it should be someone that is sort of connected to the 60s, that is still sort of not necessarily relevant, but is still sort of active. And, you know, even if you had Tom Jones come back or something,
okay,
he could still belt out an amazing tune. Or The Who.
Right.
I know it's The Two now. It's not The Who. But right. Do something like that. Or
think The Who's pretty tied up with CSI themes?
No, I think they can find the time.
All right. If CSI Trenton is coming and they're writing furiously.
Townsend's hearing can hold up, I think they could do it. And I thought Florence and the Machine might be good.
Oh, sure.
As a more current sort of artist.
Yeah.
But those would be my votes. I don't think it should be like a ballad. I think it should be like a Thunderball, Live and Let Die type, blow your head off kind of theme song. Not a all-time high Rita Coolidge sort of thing. What about you?
I think, it's sort of along the same lines as what you said. I think they should take all of the people that have done Bond themes that are still living and do like a We Are the World celebration where everyone takes a verse and then they all sing the chorus.
You really
together.
Think so?
Yeah, yeah, that's what I think. You get Paul McCartney in there.
Wow.
You get Garbage in there.
You get Shirley Bassey.
Shirley Bassey is
still
in there.
Yeah.
Tina Turner.
Rita Coolidge.
Yeah.
Wow. In fact, just about everyone.
Yeah.
I think Matt Monro might still be kicking around.
See, that's my idea.
That's it. Just,
yeah, yeah.
I thought for sure it would be like Weird Al or that other guy.
Jonathan Colton. I mean, I would love that.
And do like an ironic... for those of you that haven't seen it yet, someone did a... took the James Bond theme, the actual instrumental James Bond theme, and added lyrics to it, and it's up. That's all I'm going to tell you. You have to find it. And I must have watched this thing a dozen times. I think it is absolutely hilarious.
It's a little racy.
Very racy. It's not for the kids, not safe for work, but it's very, very funny and clever.
It is funny.
So, okay, so that's what I'm looking forward to. I'm just going to go into cryo freeze until October.
Are they saying this is going to be a definitive thing with lots of extras and fun stuff too?
I have to say, they have always done a really good job with their DVDs. Before Blu-ray, you know, the initial set that came out, then they put out these box sets when I think Casino Royale came out in the theaters. There is a ton of extras on each of these discs. I mean, everything that sort of has existed, from TV commercials to, you know, if there's a TV special from 65, it's on there. If there was a TV special from 87, it's on there.
Was it Roger Moore on The Muppet Show? Is that on there?
No, it's not that stuff. It's more officially sort of sanctioned stuff. But they're really extensive. You know, they really did a great job. So it's all that's come before and more, apparently. There's like another 8 hours worth of extras that are coming on there. So I mean, they did a thing where... just for Roger Moore's, actually, all the little documentaries that are on each of the initial DVDs are narrated by Patrick McNee, which is awesome, because he was in A View to a Kill, but he was also John Steed, which is very cool. But he narrated every one of these things. Right. And Roger Moore, you know, sat for interviews for each of these, and a lot of the principals and the stunt people, and they're really, really well done. So anyway, that's what I'm excited about.
Okay. One other thing I want to mention that's happening next week is... Adam West has been chosen to get a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yeah.
And Ralph Garman, who is a fellow nerd, a local DJ here, is doing an evening with Adam West. I believe that is
January 28th.
At the John Lovitz Theater in Universal City Walk.
The what?
The John Lovitz Comedy Theater.
John Lovitz has a theater?
Yeah. That's where Kevin Smith records all his podcasts.
It's called
the
John Lovitz Theater?
It is the John Lovitz
Comedy
and Podcast Theater, yes.
I had no
Universal
idea.
Universal City Walk.
Are you going?
And so, I'm thinking about it, maybe.
You're doing a lot of plugs to today, I got to say. Are you getting...
No, I'm getting nothing.
I just think this would be something really cool. Why don't I know about this? Are you getting...
No.
Is that a new shirt?
This is not a new shirt.
You got a new glass frames?
I would like to plug my new glasses.
What is
going on? But this event... You know, to get a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, the actor has to pay for it.
Oh,
and
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's like $20,000.
Oh, wow.
They ain't cheap.
Yeah.
So it's like, we'll give you the honor of putting one there, but you got to buy it.
I didn't know that. I thought it was more that they raised funds or there was some organization that...
Nope.
Oh, interesting.
You're responsible. You can raise the funds, and that's what they're doing. So the money from this...
That's great.
Yeah, so it's going to be this live thing where
Ralph
interviews Adam West... talks about his whole career, and then I think they're going to sell the podcast later.
Cool.
And if you can't go to it, if you don't live in California, I think you can go to adamweststar.com and you can still donate if you want to help get him a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. I just thought that was something cool. You know,
oh,
absolutely. I would love to see that.
I love these guys. You know, all these guys that, and I think about the, remember that documentary I told you about, that Jonathan Ross, Steve Ditko thing? All these guys that were so instrumental in whatever it was, whether, you know, Adam West had anything to do with the creation at all. I mean, it's iconic, you know, and you know, I just read the new Shatner book, actually, where he talked about how bad it was in the early 70s, where he was, before the motion picture, I mean, he was not only just doing, you know, game shows for a buck, he was going around the country in a truck, sleeping in his truck. He would go and do theater, and then he would, like, shower where the theater was, and then sleep in his truck. That's how bad it was.
Birthday party for a hot sandwich.
He would. I mean, that's how bad it was, you know. Yeah. And then motion picture came along, and I don't think it was really until like the early 80s with T.J. Hooker and stuff that things started.
Hey, Hooker's a good cop.
He's a good cop. He's always been a good cop. That started to turn around, and you know, now of course he's doing fine, but things get really bad for these guys, you know. Yeah. And there wasn't a lot of. I mean, unfortunately, West got typecast, you know, and the show was massive.
Yeah.
By its second season, it started to lose people already, and then it was like reruns for, you know, 45 years.
To this day.
Yeah,
it's
and
on the hub right
I don't
now.
Know what guys like that get. And still, there's
he's
some...
Still doing, he's doing a lot of voiceover stuff. He's, like, reoccurring on The Family Guy
I think the past
stuff.
10 years have been pretty good.
Yeah.
But always...
Ralph is a lifelong, you know, 66 Batman fan. He has got an unbelievable collection in his house, like hidden behind a bookcase and stuff.
Oh, cool.
The whole thing. So for him to be able to do this, you know, it's like this is the perfect pairing of these two guys.
That's cool.
So, yeah, should be pretty exciting.
Well, maybe I'll make it. Maybe I'll be able to go.
You should. The John Lovitz Podcast Theater. And I believe it's
January 28th.
The other thing I'm excited about is the return of Valiant Comics.
Yeah, you mentioned this.
They just announced, you know, they've been sort of teasing it up until the new year, but now they are coming back. They've signed this deal with Diamond Comics as the exclusive distributor. So Valiant was a comic company back in the 90s, you know, kind of a grim time, what I like to call the chromium age, because it was all about, you know,
foil covers and
lenticulars and but
Liefeld.
They crafted a universe that was so tight, it was unlike anything I had really seen anywhere else. And, you know, they picked up some of the old Gold Key characters like Solar Man of the Atom and Turok, and they wove it all together. It was Jim Shooter had a big part of it.
Oh, yes.
You know, back
he used to be with Marvel.
Back, yeah. And, you know, he rubs people kind of the wrong way sometimes.
I'd heard that.
You know, the different stories about him, but it was rock solid the way they created this universe and how all these things tied together, even from different, you know, sort of time periods and stuff. And, you know, they had some really great titles like Shadow Man, and, you know, the Solar stuff was great. There were not everything was gold. There was Bloodshot, Ninjak, and some of that stuff. But one of my favorites was Exo Manowar, which was kind of an Iron Man, Green Lantern-y hybrid. But they were just great, tight stories.
And how long did the Valiant run for?
I would say it was maybe 5-6 years. Okay. You know?
And now it's coming with Shooter.
I don't think Shooter is back with them. Not that I understand, but it's a lot of those same characters. And right as it was starting to sort of die off, they were just talking about getting into licensing and making action figures. And I would have loved to have. I think there was maybe even a prototype of the Exo Manowar figure. And that was around the time you were getting like all those little independent action figures of like, you know, Warrior Nuns and
all those little
black and white imprint. You know, they'd make these
Warrior Nun, what was it? Arella or something?
Arella, yeah,
I remember that figure. That was
a
big deal that figure came out. Like,
yes.
Where did that come from?
Yeah, so it was just sort of that time period. And then it kind of went away. But, you know, I'm excited to see these characters again. I'm excited to read some new stories with that because I really enjoyed that.
Cool.
And I hope, you know, they've got a lot of this. I'm hoping they have a lot of the same people and that they keep that real tight continuity where they can tell those big crossovers and still everything exists in its own universe in a nice cohesive form. So,
and when does it launch?
I know that they're going to have some stuff out on Free Comic Book Day.
Okay.
Which is in May, but I think it's going to be out a little sooner than that.
May?
Yeah.
That's pretty far away, isn't it?
Well,
sort of.
Do you consider May far away from January?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yes,
then
I
guess it's far away.
It's kind of far away.
No, but I, as I understand it, there will be stuff launching prior to that. But I know that they've got something in Free Comic Book Day.
Well, give me a heads up, and
I'll
try to grab some titles if you're on your recommendation.
Sounds good.
Welcome back, Valiant.
Yes. So another thing that's in the news right now is Mattel just announced that some of the stuff for Masters of the Universe is having to move around a bit because of production delays and shipping.
Yes.
And that's, you know, that's part of the industry.
It happens.
And that's something you probably know something about, created stuff. And I don't know that fans totally understand it. They think, you know, people are holding out on them. And
I don't think they do.
There's some paranoid conspiracy theorist with that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know enough about what exactly is going on at Mattel, and I don't know enough about the history, you know, of the subscriptions or how timely that stuff has been or any problems that have, you know, occurred with that. And I don't know, I know a little bit about this and the delays, but I can just tell you that you're at the mercy of so many elements in trying to do this stuff. We can, you know, give you an example, one of the licenses that we got, you know, before we actually, let's just say that the paperwork was going to be done in January or whatever, December, January, you know, as we're talking to them, we're asking, and that's how long it takes to sort of get the paperwork done. But as we're talking to them about it and getting that together, we're saying, hey, can we get some assets now? Can we look at some things so we can, on our dime, on our own time, because we know that we want to hit the ground running when the thing is signed so that we're already ahead of the game by 2 or 3 months and we've got plans and we can just go, here, but the thing is signed, you know, submit this design and let's get started. And they, of course, go, well, don't do anything yet. And we're going, no, we're just going to do it anyway. Whether it actually goes through or not, this is how we have to do it, because you've got the lifetime of the license, you've got that alone. So, and what I'm trying to say is we can do everything we're supposed to do, you know, as we're supposed to do it with our deadlines. It doesn't mean that the factory is going to ship it on time, or they're not going to have problems or audits, or they're, something isn't going to happen to the stuff on the way over on a boat. You know, do you remember Product Enterprise?
Sure.
That company, great company. They had Doctor Who, they had the Avengers, they had some of the Gerry Anderson stuff.
Yep.
Man, they were such a great company. Their packaging alone was better than anything that's ever been done in the collector market. I mean, they commissioned artists to do paintings for these packages. I mean, it was amazing
stuff.
The care and love in these things, and the problems they had with licensing and everything else. But they had a shipment once of Space 1999, that Eagle ship, come over on a boat where the boat caught on fire, and half the shipment was destroyed. And this was like a year and a half's worth of work.
Yeah.
And this was their final, like, okay, now we're ready to go push the button. Here it goes. We're going to make some, finally get our money back and, you know, finally get this product out there. And that's what happened. I mean, there are so many things that can go wrong, in addition to the licenses themselves and dealing with the studios and the networks.
Right.
I mean, these people generally have many, many, many other things on their plates to take care of and deal with before they get to sign off on your thing. So we can promise it in September, but unless we're on top of all those elements, and when we submit something, it's not like you're going to submit it on a Monday and hear back on a Friday.
Right.
You know, you've got to give it a week or two and then send a reminder and say, hey, Steve, just wondering, did you get a chance to look at this yet? Oh, yep, going to get to it. We are
And that's for every product.
Every single product, every SKU, every license we have, we are spending 70% of our time reminding people what needs to be done.
Right.
And it's not trying to do their jobs. It's just we know they're busy, but if we don't do that, this stuff isn't going to happen. And that's just us. That's the cult stuff.
And you don't necessarily even have relationships with these factories. You know these people,
right?
But they are making, you know, they'll make your bobblehead one day, and then the next day they'll make, you know, nipples for baby bottles.
Yep.
And then the next day they will make, you know, chairs. The next day they'll make telephones.
Yep.
And none of it means anything to them.
No.
There's no attachment to them.
No.
And a lot of these factories, you know, it's pretty cutthroat over there.
Oh, yeah.
They will, you know, they will bump you. They will bump any He-Man figure to make, you know, a run of McDonald's Happy Meal toys.
There is a
different... Because those things, they're making hundreds of thousands of them.
There is just a different way of doing business over there with the factories. There is just a different way that is a standard way of doing business where they will do things like that. They will put that aside and go do something else.
Yeah.
And you're suddenly at the mercy because you're not there. You can't be monitoring this all the time. And even if you were, it wouldn't necessarily do any good. So it's a lot of faith and it's a lot of staying on top of these things. And again, I'm speaking for us and
right.
What we deal with is you know, they're cult properties and none of us are, you know, these are not, you know, our stuff isn't necessarily in Target, you know. So I'd imagine it's tenfold with the bigger companies and what they're sort of dealing with. I mean, I would imagine that there's more safety in place as well.
Oh,
the bigger
absolutely
the
is.
Bigger you get with, you know, those. When I mean I say safety, I mean, you know,
testing.
I mean like monitoring, not the testing. I mean, all have to kind of go through that. I mean, staying on top of these guys. Like we're doing it, but I'll bet you, you know, I'm sure that Mattel has a whole team of people that are like, you know, Jim, get on the phone. And this is us doing it.
Yeah.
This is us on our Blackberries and our email, you know, doing. But that's our company. That's the cult stuff, and we're grassroots and everything. So.
And I don't know anything, you know, I haven't spoken to Mattel about this. I've only read the same things everyone else has.
And what is it exactly that they...
Well,
they...
the first one was Demo Man that was supposed to come out in December.
Mm-hmm.
And the factory only shipped them part of the drop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't the full thing. And they didn't want to just send them out to some people and not other people because
mm-hmm.
that would, you know, make people burn the internet down. So they bumped him back.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's something that sort of... apparently is a domino effect that sort of shook things up from, you know, because they do that monthly subscription.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of from January to July, they've had to move some pieces around. So they're guaranteed the stuff is going to be in the warehouse
mm-hmm.
in time to sell it each month
mm-hmm.
when they do that Maddie Collector Day, which is usually on the 15th of the month. So they just announced that, you know, everything they had shown at Comic-Con that was supposed to be January through July is kind of sliding around a bit.
Mm.
You're still getting all the same things.
It's just that they're delayed.
Right.
Yeah, I mean,
And people are acting like, well, they should do something to reward us for that. You know, we should get something free because you changed your mind on things.
It's just, I mean, this is just the nature of... I mean, look at that. I remember that Diamond had that... this is really nerdy, but that Star Trek Wrath of Khan... communicator. You remember that thing?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing is like...
The Diamond
it's got,
Select Toys one.
Yeah, but it's got like Khan talking and Kirk saying Khan. You can hit the button on a setting just to have him say Khan over and over. And over. You can set it on the counter to be doing that for an hour, you know? That thing was delayed like a year and a half almost from the time they promised it to when it actually came out. And I don't think it was them going... you know, let's just wait on this. I think
right.
they didn't have enough orders or there were problems in production or whatever it was. And it's just, this is how this collector stuff goes. I mean, it's, you know, I can't imagine, this is why we're so wary of dealing with current properties and why if somebody said, well, look, you know, there's a movie coming out in July, well, here's this license, you know, for free kind of thing. Even that's risky because we're relying on that hard release date that all of our stuff is going to be here when it's supposed to be. You know,
right.
we're it's delicate enough for us promising it, you know, on the release dates that we do, but tying it into a TV series or a motion picture, it's insane. You're rolling this stuff, and we have to plan this stuff. We have to plan stuff for Comic-Con, which is July. We started planning it in November.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And
yeah.
now we're even getting tight where. Couple things we might not even have because of the licensor going, I don't know if we're gonna if they don't get back to us by a certain date, we're not gonna have it ready
right.
for the big show.
Yeah.
You know? This is just what happens. This is
yeah.
just what happens with, and again, this isn't the stuff that we're talking about with Maddie is not mainstream. This isn't like a brand new movie that's coming out. This is a collector market
right.
and collector titles and characters. And this is just what happens, unfortunately. I don't think there's anything underhanded I wouldn't imagine
yeah.
going on. It's just, it happens.
Unless, yeah, because, you know, sometimes there's stuff underhanded with the factory.
Right.
I remember this is that kind of famous story that that factory closed down. The Four Horsemen, you know, have been doing their original
mm-hmm.
pieces, the fantastic stuff
mm-hmm.
and the Gothropolis, and the factory they were using shut down and took their molds.
Oh, wow.
Took them with them.
Yeah.
And... Randy from NECA, you
mm-hmm.
know, he's good friends with the Horsemen, and I think he was using the same factory, And, you know, they were taking NECA stuff. And Randy had a rep there that went and got NECA stuff and went ahead and got the Four Horsemen stuff with it.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, I heard another story. I won't mention the companies, but it was horrible. Just very, very strange and underhanded stuff that goes on where all of a sudden you're just stuck. You know, we've been very, very fortunate. But, you know, it'll all get worked out, I'm sure. And everything, I mean, I don't think anyone gets charged until the stuff ships, right? Isn't that how it works usually?
I believe so.
I don't know. Person. Well, for us, yeah. But I don't know about this thing.
As far as the people?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, like the subscription thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
that's correct.
You know, it's unfortunate. I understand people getting upset and, you know, expecting something at a certain time. But I don't know. People are going to hate me for saying this. But at the end of the day, it's like, I try to keep it in perspective. Like, this isn't, you know, life-saving medicine here. This is an action figure.
No one's shipping organs.
Yeah. Although they might. You never know at those factories.
That's right.
They could get things mixed up. And you suddenly open up a case of hearts.
Mom!
What is that? These aren't our toys.
Our new livers are here. All right. So, yeah, I just wanted to kind of
touch on that.
Because I know you would have some more insight into
it. Learn something from that.
Okay. So this is a topic that I wanted to bring up because it's something that we've talked about on AFI a little bit. I don't think you know too much about it, but you think I'm crazy, is rearranging the toy shelves.
You're right.
In stores.
I do think you're crazy for a number of reasons, but this one, lay it on me. What the hell are you talking about?
And I am included in this. When you go to the toy store, you're looking for stuff, see what's new, and stores have a tendency to want to spread out their merchandise to make it look like it's fuller. So if there's 4 pegs of Star Wars figures, 4 pegs available, and there's only 4 Star Wars figure, they will hang 1 figure on each peg.
Really?
For the illusion that, oh, look, you know, we've got something on every peg. You know, our shelves are full.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so there are people that will then take those and put them all on one peg. So 4 figures on one peg, 3 empty pegs. And with the hope that Target will come by and go, oh, we need to order more of those things. And also, you know, kids knock things down and their stuff sort of laying everywhere. They'll sort of tidy up in the aisle so that the store knows actually how much stock they have.
So your reason for doing it is to kind of let them know that it's time to reorder stuff.
Yes. It's to what I always say in my mind is to encourage new growth. Let's get some more stuff
in. They're doing it. Employees are doing it to make it seem like the shelves are filled in.
That's right. And some stores even have like those little sort of rubber things that slide onto the pegs that so you can't push stuff to the back. Mm-hmm. It holds things to the front.
Mm-hmm.
I guess also as an optical illusion where you think they've got full shelves because look, there's something hanging.
Yeah, who's
right
that fooling?
There on the front. No one. I don't know why they would do that. That kind of makes me crazy.
Well, I can tell you I've never heard of this and I've never done it and I don't think I ever will. I don't think it's something that I would be prone to do. But I'm glad there are guys like you out there doing it.
Straightening the shelves,
because that's
trying to get the new stuff in.
Getting new stuff onto the shelves.
At least that's my attempt.
I do notice, and I don't know enough about this, but I do notice because, you know, having had to go to like a Target toward the end of, you know, before Christmas, you know, the end of the holidays and everything, it did seem like there was more stuff. It seems like they, toward the end of the year, they start pulling stuff out of the back room that's been sitting around that I've never seen before.
Right.
You know, and suddenly I'm seeing things that the rest of the world has seen, you know, 8 months ago. I'm like, where did all this come from? Like,
right. Yeah, that's,
you know, like
that's part of the joy of collecting in Los Angeles.
Those Captain America Hydra.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you couldn't find one to sit. Now, like, they're a dime a dozen. They're everywhere. It's just like suddenly they're going, oh, let's pull this. So either that's how long it's taking to get new stock, or there's stuff in the back that they're just like, okay, shove it out there real
quick.
Well,
they certainly do, you know, sort of try and dump as much stuff as possible in the holiday season to crank through it. And then normally they will do their inventory right after that. So the store is at its lowest point for everything.
Mm.
And it's easier to count things when there's fewer of them. So
interesting.
That's always their mentality. But like Target and Toys R Us, for instance, they will always, you know, you'll see them right around Thanksgiving, a little maybe the week before, just start stacking stuff up on the shelves above, like almost to the ceiling, where they can just, instead of having to go in the back and keep getting stuff, they do it like board games and sort of a lot of the bigger stuff. They'll just keep pulling stuff off that top shelf to refill the empty shelves.
So, Target managers out there, if you're listening, if you should put one or two things on a peg here and there, and you come by an hour later and you see that the pegs are different and all the figures are on one peg, just know that it was Daniel Pickett, your friendly neighborhood peg.
Well, we could do it. We could run a poll on this too. Do other people do that? And do you think people that do that are psychotic?
That's a good. Those are two polls.
Or very helpful. Those are two different polls.
Let's start with who out there is doing this.
Who is doing
I've
it?
I've never heard of this.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't know that this. That's what did
it. I was pleased to learn that I am not alone. That there are quite a few collectors out there in the country that will do the same thing.
Interesting.
So.
All right. Good to know. I will next time I'm at Target. I look at that aisle. I'll know it was you.
That's me.
That's your trademark.
That's right.
The toy bandit.
So one other thing I wanted to mention is, because this is something we talk, you know, in our conversations, we both watch a lot of like BBC television and stuff. And there's an awful lot lately of repurposing that stuff for American television.
Yeah, a lot of it.
And it is the exception, not the rule, that the American version is not as good.
It's the exception, not the rule.
I guess I'm saying that backwards.
Generally.
More often than not, I can't think of any that have surpassed the original.
Right. I haven't seen them all, but
right.
But I find it bizarre that I see a billboard for Being Human on Sci-Fi, knowing that the British one is airing concurrently on like BBC America.
Right.
You know, it's like, that's just, I mean, I get it when it's like Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and all that. But I would agree that I haven't seen much, and I didn't follow that show very well. I kind of give
Being
up on
human?
That. Yeah. But there's a lot of it. Yeah. And I don't think it's done as well.
I mean, you could make an argument for The Office. It changed itself enough that it became its own creature.
But I just think that it's, what was just on the other day? I was flipping around. Arthur.
Oh, right, yeah.
They did a remake of Arthur.
Yes, they did.
With Russell Brand.
Yes.
And the few moments that I caught, well, I'd say a few, I literally got sucked in for like 30 minutes.
You watched 30 minutes of
I
the
did,
Arthur.
And I because I got fascinated because there were some things that were identical.
Okay.
Like, they changed a bit of dialogue, but the scene itself, it was him and then another girl that was supposed to be Liza Minnelli, and then Helen Mirren was John Gielgud, and the interplay was almost the same as it was. The worst thing I've seen, and I know this is a popular thing to do, to trash remakes, like, oh, the whole world's remake crazy, and I'm not. There are some that are, like, Let Me In. Did you see?
I did.
I thought was as good,
and
in some ways better than the original, and I'm probably going to get crucified for saying it, but there are some things in there that are even better, I thought, than the original.
So the original was Let the Right One In.
Yeah.
And it was subtitled.
Yeah.
And then they remade it as Let Me In.
If it's done right, I mean, I got no problem with it. What I have a problem with is did you ever see Death at a Funeral?
Yes.
The British one?
Yes.
Very funny movie.
Uh-huh.
They remade that less than 2 years later with an African-American cast.
Yes.
It is virtually the same. I mean, it's not. In some bits, there are the same exact same dialogue, and then some that they've changed just a bit here and there, and then some that's radically changed. But it's the same movie. They even got Peter Dinklage to come back and play the same exact guy. He's the same character. Do we say dwarf or do you say little person? Is that really little person? Still, it seems like
so.
It's not appropriate.
Well, he's a dwarf on Game of Thrones, though, so we can technically call him that, right?
That's mythical long ago.
Right.
You can say it then.
Okay.
You don't say it now, but little person just seems
person.
Like
yeah. Well,
seems
dwarf,
like belittling.
Dwarf is fine.
Dwarf is okay?
They don't like midget.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
Well,
you can't say that.
I just well, you
can't.
Can I just said they didn't like it. I didn't call someone that.
All right. So a man of lesser stature.
Diminutive stature.
Yes. It's the same exact character played by Peter Dinklage. Like, they didn't even go, like, is there anybody else out there that is of the same build?
Well, how do you know he didn't call up? Like, hey, wait a second.
He might have. But it is he does some of the same stuff. And it's just like, really? Like, and I don't know how well it did or whatever, but that made me nuts. That was like an SNL sketch. Like a sketch of a film. Like, really? We're really doing this thing? This is really happening less than 2 years later.
Right.
It's not like it was some, you know, Swedish film with subtitles. It was a British film.
Right.
You could understand it just fine,
yes.
You know, and then they redid it like that very quickly.
I think my biggest one is Life on Mars.
Oh, yeah. But they redid that in several countries.
Oh, did they?
Yeah,
oh,
they did about six or seven different versions.
Was it as awful as? Because the original is great.
The original is fantastic. Probably the best series of the past 10 years, I think. That first season, with John Sim, I thought was absolutely.
Did you watch the American version?
I watched two episodes, I think, and it just was because you reach a point where you know you realize you just want. It's just a riff on what you've just seen with the same dialogue.
Well, the problem is they thought, well, everyone knows how they watched the UK version. Mm-hmm. We still want to have some surprises. So they changed sort of the whole fundamental foundation of it.
Oh, you mean the finale?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you hear about that?
I heard about that. But that was always the trick. Did you ever finish Life on Mars and Ashes to Ashes? Did you ever get through all of Ashes to Ashes?
Uh-huh.
I mean, that is one of the few times where I thought, how are they going to wrap this up? It's never going to be sufficient. And they did it, and it took me a minute to sort of go, oh, I'm going to give over to this, and it worked for me. It was almost like the only solution they could have had. I'm not going to give it away, because if you take that journey, the two or three seasons of Ashes to Ashes and the two of Life on Mars, you will be rewarded with an amazing five seasons of shows and an incredible payoff. The thing that was never going to work with Life on Mars, and what made it so...
The American version.
What made it so fantastic, the original version, was you have this meticulous cop that, you know, does what he does, and he's anal retentive, and he relies on email and technology and everything else, and he goes back to the early 70s, which is essentially the Old West.
Right.
Manchester, early 70s. It was so corrupt and so grimy and dirty that he says in the opening, it's like a different planet. Like, where the hell am I? But in doing that, you've got racism, you've got sexism, you've got swearing galore, you've got major political incorrectness, which you could never have on a network show like that on Saturday nights or whatever it was. It was never on an ABC show. You're never going to drop, you know, N-bombs or whatever, but you know what I mean? Like you could never have the captain be, you know, the governor,
right,
Philip Glenister, be as racist in the American version and or have the drinking and the smoking in the precinct. You can't have that on television now. You can't. You could get away with it on UK television. And that's why I thought it was never going to work.
But you heard what they changed it to.
Yes,
how it ended.
I did.
Should I say?
I don't know. Maybe people want to discover this. That's a spoiler, isn't it?
It would be a spoiler, but I don't know if anyone's
I'm
going
to leave
go
it
out.
Up to you. I'm stepping back. I'm leaving the room.
So the solution, and you can, you know, turn your microphone or your iPods down now if you don't want to hear this. The American version, they actually were on their way to Mars. They were all on a spaceship in cryogenic freeze on their way to Mars. And like Harvey Keitel was the lead actor's dad, and it was just a whole thing. And
I feel
and
like,
watch the whole season and go, really? That's where we've been headed this whole time?
But I feel like they knew. I feel like they knew it wasn't going to continue, and they were like, there's no way we're going to wrap this thing up. Let's come up. They're going to hate us for this anyway. Let's do something ridiculous. And that they couldn't have been that serious about that ending, because it just was... I never got there. I never stayed with it, because I was so taken by that original show that I just couldn't give over to the other one.
Yeah.
But you know, if it's done right, I'm there. I'm not against remakes.
And that would be what?
Yeah, well, let me in.
Oh, let me in.
Let the right one in. Let me in. I think that's an amazing example. Oh, you know what else is a great one?
What's that?
The Manchurian Candidate.
Oh, okay.
The Jonathan Demme Manchurian Candidate. The John Frankenheimer. 63, you know, Frank Sinatra one, the Demi,
right.
Denzel Washington one, is a great movie and a great remake, because it's the same film, but they change enough and update enough that it's even creepier than it was in 63. And 63 is still pretty creepy.
Right.
63 or 64? 62?
You should know this.
I should know
I'm
this.
I'm ashamed of you.
We'll get letters. But that's a great remake.
Excellent.
I think, yeah.
Well, we've managed to talk about stuff that we love for another 45 minutes.
We sure did.
So,
I hope people are listening.
Well, I
hope we didn't lose anyone.
Well, I told them to turn their iPods down.
Oh, you did. Come back.
So, yeah, turn them back on.
Turn them back on. We're saying goodbye.
We'll finish this up.
Yep.
We haven't forgot about the special guests that we were talking about.
No,
I'm
we haven't.
Hammering out the technology on that. The list is getting longer.
Longer.
People that we have asked and have agreed to it. So that's going to be coming fairly soon. We've got Toy Fair coming up. I'm going to that. So
oh.
I think we'll be doing some reporting from there.
I won't be there.
You won't be.
I will not be there.
That's all right.
Previous engagements. But we could maybe do a remote.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
So we'll be talking about that in the coming weeks. That is in mid-February-ish.
February, yeah.
But for now, we're going to sign off on another fine episode of Geek Shall Inherit. We thank you so much for listening. We thank you so much for your feedback. We're loving it. We're getting some more reviews on the iTunes. People are emailing us. Make sure to check out Overcast, where we post all the things that we've been talking about today. So that's it. Thank you very much.
And again, yes. Any suggestions, any topics
you want covered,
please
we'll talk about it.
Feel free to throw them our way.
Yeah.
Keep them clean.
Shiny. Let's be bad guys. I know Kung Fu.
Show me.
Secrets of nature's deepest mystery.